RPG Lessons Learned. When the game is over, when your players are gone, that's when lessons are learned. Welcome to RPG Lessons Learned. If you've never listened before, we talk about our specific game sessions and lessons that we actually learned during them so that GMs can learn from our mistakes. And I'm here with Brian.
I love that.
I need to start doing that more. I did it a couple episodes ago.
I don't think you said it that way, though.
I'm going to say it a different way every time.
Okay.
But the same thing.
That, like, crystallizes the whole concept.
So, Brian, how are you?
I'm great. I just had a coffee, a large diet Dr. Pepper, and now I'm working on my first rock star for the day. It's now my second rock star for the day.
Is the diet Dr. Pepper caffeinated? I don't know. So, like, is Dr. Pepper caffeinated?
I'm sorry, it's Diet Coke.
And oh, okay.
Diet Coke is heavily caffeinated.
Yes. Awesome.
Of all the non-hyper caffeinated beverages, the ones that are intentionally sold as caffeinated, Diet Coke is the highest. It's right up there with Mountain Dew.
So, very energetic episode for you.
Absolutely.
And then we also have Mike with us.
Hello.
Mike, at this point, I think in the credits, you've gone from, what do they call it, a guest star to a, quote, regular.
That's awesome. I'd love to be a regular.
So does that mean that Mike's going to show up every weekend at my house?
Well, I mean, we could talk about that offline. Are you okay with that?
I'd be fine with that.
I would love to come back to RFC Studios anytime you want to have me.
Considering this is the only time I ever see you, I would be A-okay with that.
I know, I agree. I need more personal time with Brian, too.
Yes.
So to spend a moment doing some BS gatekeeping here. So, Brian, how many episodes in does Mike have to be before we edit the title card to say Dusty, Brian, and Mike?
I would say at least five more.
At least five more?
Yeah.
Okay. When you edit the title card, can you just do like a really crappy MS Paint job where you just write Mike on it with like the pencil tool?
I kind of love that idea of the and Mike being clearly a different font / afterthought.
Yeah.
I like that. So with that being said, though, we probably should be thinking about new album art in general, because I think we should probably cycle through that at least once a month. It'd be nice if we had a lot of different album art to play with.
Ooh.
It's just a cheap podcast trick to get more downloads.
Okay. I'm sitting here thinking about what we can do next. I was so proud. So for those of you who don't know, that's my arm holding that binder. And the cufflinks didn't quite come through in the album art.
We can fix that.
I love my D20 cufflinks. And the whole point of capturing the picture of me holding the binder was to also get the D20 cufflink. So we should play with... We're moving further away from our whole business ethos. We're still doing lessons learned, but we're not making it as business-oriented. And I'm kind of okay with that.
I honestly, one of the other podcasts I do, How Was Your Weekend?, is going more heavily business because that's what I love talking about.
Well,
in Radio Free Cybertron, the primary podcast I do, we always try to talk about things from the business perspective. We talk about Transformers, and what people don't realize is Hasbro, the company that produces them, and Takara, they're businesses. So they're constrained by, you know, the types of constraints that a business has, like capital.
Manufacture things based on that, whether or not it will be cool,
exactly.
But based on whether or not people will purchase it.
And I love talking about things from a business context. It's I think it's becoming my thing.
Okay, well, we still do talk about lessons learned every episode.
Yes, we do.
So that is the business piece of it, because in business you do the same thing. You talk about, you do something, you don't have data, it's squishy. What do? You round up everyone involved and you talk about lessons learned so you can get better next time. So that's what we do. All right. Today, we are talking about the adventure from the Pathfinder Beginner Box, Black Fang's Dungeon. And I ran this for you guys probably 6 months ago. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Has it only been 6 months? I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe even... Yeah, so we played bi-weekly. But this was the first time I had ever run Pathfinder. It's not the first time that Brian and I have played Pathfinder.
No, it was the second time.
Yeah, we need to. So that was a little misadventure we had at MACE, the Mid-Atlantic Convention Expo. We should record that episode soonish.
We should. So the guy was local. We should hunt him down and record it with him.
Oh yeah, bring him aboard and tell him what a terrible job he did.
You ruined this game for us. Here's a list of how.
Here are the lessons that you should learn. No, that sounds awful and obnoxious. We'll cover that on that episode. But you know what? I will say this. It sounds obnoxious. Recording this every week is making me much thicker skinned about feedback. And I noticed that you guys, every week or every other week now when we run, if the session didn't go as great, you guys used to always be super polite. Like, no, Dusty, it was great. Good game. Peace out. Have a good one. But now, if things don't go well, you don't mind telling me what went poorly and why.
Feedback is precious.
It is precious. And
that's a business concept.
Absolutely. And the show has really thickened my skin as far as the ability to take feedback. And I think it's made you guys more aware of giving feedback. So when a session doesn't go well, like Brian, you especially, if we finished up and the session didn't go well, you're like, you know, next time we should do this instead. So
I think we've also matured as players so that we can identify what didn't and didn't work, right? So we know that line between I understood that this didn't go as well as I thought it should versus this didn't go as well because I'm a stupid player and I don't know how to play.
So let's do something a little different this episode. Before we jump into Black Fang's Dungeon, because it's more recent, because we remember it more, we don't have to jog our memories quite as hard, let's open up with our first impressions.
Of Pathfinder?
No, of that exact session. So this is the session where we went into Black Fang's Dungeon, we took out some goblins, there were a few puzzle encounters, statues.
Was this our first game with Nathan?
No, the first game with Nathan was the L5R game.
Okay. Was this the one where he used the Pythagorean theorem?
No,
okay.
that was definitely the L5R game.
Okay.
But, I mean, Nathan was definitely in this game.
Because it's kind of hard to separate out my feelings of this game without Nathan specifically. And that's because I think in terms of who I'm playing with as much as anything, and that's not a comment specifically about Nathan. It's just like, literally, we started playing with him around the same time.
Yeah, we had played a few adventures. We played the L5R game. He joined us for that. He joined us for quite a few of the D100 games.
Yep.
I really like Nathan, so I enjoy playing with him.
Yeah.
So I think that's colored my opinion a little bit, but not in a substantial way.
So how does that relate to this session?
So I think that coming in early on, again, we hadn't been playing with him long, so we were still going through a feeling out period. Because honestly, I mean, he'll listen to this, but we all had dinner after I think the first game where Nathan played, and we just talked about, it's like, hey, how was the game? Did you enjoy playing with Nathan?
We went to Iron Grill.
Yeah,
and he went home. We went to Iron Grill, and we basically did kind of like almost a post interview assessment.
Yeah, it's kind of like what Jason and I did after we hung out with you for the first time.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that story.
So, you know, like, yeah, we like him. It's fun. We'll see how it goes. So we're still feeling it out. Now I have a very firm understanding of what the game is going to be like with him. But at that point, not only were we feeling that out, we were still trying to play this new system. And it shouldn't feel so different from D&D, but you're basically going back a system and a half.
Yeah.
So it did feel different.
Well, and it feels different too, because this is the first game that wasn't a one shot after like roughly a year and a half of just one shots.
Yeah.
We got burnt out on our 4E campaign, and we didn't really talk about this. I tried to start another secondary 4E campaign, which the Prison Break was the last game of that. I ran the Geomorphic Dungeon, which we haven't covered on the show yet. We've mentioned it, but we haven't covered it. And then the Prison Break, which we did talk about, that was an early episode. Those were two games of me attempting to start a new campaign, and you guys just weren't having it. So I was like, you know what? We're going to one-shot different games, different characters, different systems. And we did that for like a year and a half.
Yeah.
I think it was the last game I ran, which is the last episode we talked about. I think it was the last game I ran with Wraithwood Cavern and the Cultists of Bane that finally put a pin in our, okay, we're done with 4E. So after those six combat encounters took 8+ hours, I think that was when...
Yeah, that was us being done with 4E. And then we went to BFRPG, but we were still in Fallcrest. We were still the same characters. You were still Stonewing and Malkior, etc.
Yep.
And then that game died in BFRPG, no fault of the systems. And then we played in 5E, the Geomorphic and the Prison Break. And that was the end of that campaign.
Yep.
And that campaign world. Yep. Which Brian now wants to revisit.
Yeah, I more the characters, because I do miss them. And again, funny, I'm playing basically Mike's character from like high school.
from like middle school. So Malkior is a character name that I first gave to a character when I first played Quest for Glory 1.
Is that a shareware game?
That's an old Sierra game for the PC. So that's like the split off of King's Quest. So in the gotcha. Sierra adventure games, you had Quest for Glory and King's Quest. I played Quest for Glory. Malkior was my Quest for Glory character name.
So Pathfinder. So the Pathfinder beginner box. This basically, I've mentioned the premise for this campaign before, but I told you guys, okay, I want to do a mini campaign. We've done one shots for a year and a half. I want to do a miniature campaign, and I said I've got the beginner box, and I've got a ton of Pathfinder stuff. I've got a shelf full of books, as you can see on Facebook. Brian posted all my bookshelf stuff. I've got a ton of boxes of pawns. I mean, I think I have. In fact, I have every single box that's been released to this point. So here we are in 2017. Every Pathfinder box of pawns that's been released, I own it. So I have a ton of Pathfinder stuff. But I said, you know what? To keep it simple and to keep prep time low and to make it so that I can run this game after work without interfering with raising my 5-year-old and holding down a job, I wanted to just run an entire campaign, levels 1 through 5, out of nothing but the beginner box. Beginner box monsters, beginner box pawns, beginner box everything. And that was what I pitched you guys. And you guys were like, great, mini campaign sounds good. So there are a couple things I want to talk about from this session, one of which is the pre-generated characters. I can't remember who picked first or how we picked. I do remember that Chris picked last, which is why he wasn't the rogue.
Yep.
Because Nathan claimed Mercial. Or no, Chris wasn't there for that first session.
That's right. Yep.
It's funny, though, you two. So, Brian and Mike, I still mix up your character sheets because in my mind...
Mike's a wizard.
Yeah.
I have never played a wizard prior to this.
I still hand Ezrin to... So, the four characters are some of the iconic Pathfinder characters. So, Pathfinder, for every class, they have this iconic character that is that embodies that class that you can play. And the four that come in the beginner box are Ezrin, the human wizard, Mercial, the elven rogue, Kyra, the human cleric, and then Valeros, the human fighter. So I still hand Ezrin's wizard character sheet to Mike almost every time we play. And then Mike's like, oh, nope. And he hands it to Brian. And I'm like, oh, crap, yeah. Now I remember.
Yeah, especially to begin with, I really just basically played the wizard like he was a fighter. And it wasn't very effective.
To be fair, you didn't have a lot of spells. You had that staff and that master's hand where you can throw it and retrieve it, like so, basically Captain America's shield.
The thing about that is, with that character, I wasn't invested in that character at all. You know, he's pre-generated, so I'm just like, screw it. So I'm not playing him at all, like the character's written out to be. So basically, he's kind of a loser. He's a degenerate. He's depressed because he's just a level 2 wizard. Nobody gives a crap. Because of him.
And in the picture of him, he's got gray hair. He's like a 60-year-old level 2 wizard.
Yeah, well, I think he's in his 50s.
His actual backstory explains this.
Yeah.
But you're not playing his actual backstory.
Well, I mean, a little bit. So, but like, all of his wizardy stuff, I've actually just started using, like, all of his spells and his feats and stuff like that. But the one thing it didn't really register, pre-generated, he has an intelligence of 17, which you pointed out, that's like 10 IQ points per level.
Yeah, well, there's an old article about that.
Yeah.
And the old article posits that he would have about a 170 IQ.
Yeah, which, of course,
is an interesting way to think about it.
Yeah. So I've started trying... I've played him off now to be more like a lot of the nerds that I've known throughout my life who basically live in their basement. They're super smart, but they have no ambition. And, you know, they only go out when they have to go out and things like that. So I've started trying to play him off like somebody who's clever without any ambition.
It wasn't but a few sessions ago that you said to me, I really want to build my own character. I don't feel Ezrin.
Oh, absolutely.
And then it was last podcast, literally last episode, last weekend, you said to me, you said on the podcast, in fact, that you're really digging Ezrin.
Yeah, I'm starting to I've started fleshing out like his personality and stuff, and I've really felt that it's like he's a character I know. It's like I know a lot of people like that. I mean, obviously, there are not that many people with an IQ of 170 when it boils down to it in the world. I mean, gosh, that's standard deviations from, you know, the average IQ. So there's not that many people in the world.
Yeah, I have no idea what the IQ range is. Like, people tell me their IQ, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, they're probably...
How do you know that?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I don't know what mine is.
Yeah, so, anyway.
But, it's abnormally high. It's abnormally high.
Yeah, once Ezrin's 170 would be, yeah.
So, but
he's out there.
Yeah, so I'm basically playing him off like he's a nerd who loves Robotech, lives in his basement with his parents, except he's now, you know, a 50-year-old.
And he's been thrust out into the world.
Thrust out in the world, and he's trying to avenge his father, who was murdered.
Wrongfully accused. Well, wrongfully slash rightfully accused, if you read the actual backstory.
Yeah. So... that's how I'm playing him out. I'm really digging it.
So you didn't mind the pre-generated character?
I did to begin with.
You did to begin with, you don't know.
I don't know.
I think the turning point for you and Ezrin was the game where you played him just as if, I'm not a good wizard at all.
Yes.
Like, you came right out and said, I am a terrible wizard. I don't know what I'm doing.
And he's trying to cheat his way into being a good wizard.
Yes.
Yeah, so like, if he can find something to like steal... Or, like, I don't think he's tried to pay somebody, because we have coin now, because of our adventure, so he has some money. So, I'd love to actually, for him to encounter another wizard who may be higher level, but down on his luck, so he can maybe pay that wizard to maybe, go to bat for him, you know, like, try to impress people. I don't know, it's kind of like a sitcom, is kind of how... He's like a sitcom loser.
He's going to outsource his wizard skills.
Yeah.
Hey, can you charge this wand for me?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so Mike, Kyra, we've talked on the show about how tired you got of your 4E cleric. So tired that we turned him into a bad guy and killed him.
Yep.
But here you are playing a cleric, playing a healer again. What do you think?
Overall, I'm happy with the character. I like her backstory. I think it's kind of amazing that both Nathan and I are playing women, and it actually hasn't imploded on itself or the campaign at all yet. So,
I've read post after post about not letting players play characters of a different gender than they are, just because of the problems it can lead to and the shenanigans, etc. But no, you and Nathan are playing it perfectly straight. I mean, these are strong, independent female characters.
Yeah, it's worked out well.
They're undeniably strong, they're undeniably independent, and they're undeniably female.
Yeah. But for the cleric herself, it's definitely heavy towards healing. I do like that I do have a few damage spells I can do, so I don't feel like I'm just always only throwing heals. She's got a decent melee attack. And then, of course, if we encounter an undead, except for the one that I won't talk about because I'm sure we'll talk about that later. When I do encounter that undead, I have those innate abilities to counter and turn undead. Overall, as a character, I think she's solid. She's probably, I would say, the best pre-built I've played so far of all of our pre-built characters. She's balanced. She's got a good backstory. She's got good stats.
So let's talk about generating characters for a minute. Any lessons learned there? So in 4E... You guys never used pre-builds. We literally never used pre-builds. The 4th edition Essentials Red Box did a great job of playing you through this choose-your-own-adventure game, where at the end of it, you'd built a character.
Yep.
And then you guys extensively used the character builder to roll characters.
Yeah.
When we played 5e games, that Walter Kramer 5th edition character sheet app for both iOS and Android, we all love it, and you guys always rolled your own 5th edition characters.
Yep.
Except for a few one-shots like the Ninja Turtles, which I rolled. For a lot of the one-shots, I rolled your characters. For the year of one-shots, I rolled them, or they were pre-rolled in the books.
You know, I think now that I've played a bunch of pre-generated characters, I've become better at rolling my own. Because I think when I started out rolling my own, I was way too focused on min-maxing and trying to game the stats. Now that I've played more pre-generated characters, I think I've noticed the importance of rolling a more balanced character.
You know, I've never been one to adhere to all of the gameplay mechanics. So as long as I can have a good time with the character, even if they have a fault and I can play into it somehow, I'm fine with it. Especially over the last couple of years, really gotten more into the RPing aspect, more so than just the mechanics aspect. So I'm typically pretty good with just dealing with whatever cards I'm dealt.
Fair. So as with so many other lessons on RPG Lessons Learned, the lesson is there's no one way to do it, right? Rolling your own is great. Pre-generateds are great as long as you mix the two and the group knows what you're up to and what you're thinking as a GM. But yeah, pre-generateds have been good. They've expanded my horizons as well, Mike. I like that you said that as far as, oh, that's an interesting idea. That's an interesting mechanic. That's an interesting thought. I'd never thought to build a character that way or to think about. I don't know. It's interesting. I enjoy looking at other people's built characters.
Yeah.
To get ideas and thoughts for how I might. So yeah, a good healthy mix of pre-generated. But here we are playing an entire campaign with pre-generated characters. Is Kyra, Mike, starting to wear thin a bit, or are you still enjoying it?
I'm still enjoying her. As I level up, I get some expansion into giving her some more damage abilities, maybe focusing a little less on the healing. So that's been working out pretty well.
Then how about you, Brian? As you level up, or as you continue to play, well, we've already covered it, really. Ezrin's not chafing. You're growing into him.
I'm growing into him. And I've missed a couple games. So I guess relatively speaking, even though the rate at which the characters level up is different, it's wrong.
No, it's the same.
So, I guess that sort of feeds into the fact that Ezrin is not as developed as the other characters.
The only two players that haven't missed a session at all are Nathan and Mike. So Nathan and Mike have the highest overall experience points. And then close second is, I accidentally hit the table that time. Close second is Brian. So Brian, you're right on their heels. You're only a level behind.
Which is fitting.
You're level three to their level four.
Which is fitting though.
Yep. And then Chris, just because of work and his daughter is much younger than mine.
And movies coming out.
Yep.
Chris will listen to this. I'm not speaking out of turn.
Yeah. He went to listen to Guardians of the Galaxy, he went to watch Guardians of the Galaxy 2 one night, which who can blame him?
Oh, yeah.
Such a great movie.
But he's lagging behind, and even he is only roughly a level behind.
Yep.
Anyway.
A thought that just came into mind. I think what's really helped us glom on and adopt these characters, these pre-gen characters in this campaign, was your efforts to do one game apiece that was a character-focused, centric game. So when you did the Kyra episode, and you did the Mercil episode, and you did the Ezrin episodes, I think that really helped us grow and kind of attach to these pre-generated characters.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that when it's your game, but in a game, and this is feedback I gave Dusty, it's specifically a game or two back.
Let's save some of it for that actual session.
Okay.
Because we have a lot of Pathfinder.
We have a lot to talk about.
Let's save that one. But what I do want to say is, this Black Fang's Dungeon, right out of the book, was the first adventure we did in this campaign. And before we ran the adventure, I had laid out for you guys the concept for the campaign.
Yep.
A whole campaign out of one box using these pre-gens. So building on lessons that I have actually learned through years of GMing, this is a campaign with a concept. And the end of this campaign is the end of the beginner box. When you guys hit level 5, we're done. We're going to do something different. Will we ever come back? I don't know, maybe. But I think when we hit level 5 and you kind of graduate from the town of Sandpoint, I think that's the end of the game. So we had already time boxed at levels 1 through 5. We had already limited the scope. You know, bad guys from beginner box and all that. We pre-limited it. So walking into a campaign with a clear sense of boundaries and a clear sense of purpose and goal and concept and limitation, I have found that really fun and helpful.
I would agree with that. I think that also helps in understanding that some of the investment I put into this character is with the understanding that one day I will stop playing this character. And so that's kind of helped me understand how much I should put into and get attached to this character as well.
And it makes the characters not so precious.
Exactly.
Because we know we're going to move on. And that's okay.
Yep.
It's good that we're going
to move on. It makes me a little more bold in combat to be like, eh, well, if I die here, then we'll figure something out between now and the end of the campaign.
So let's talk about Black Fang's Dungeon. There are 10 different areas. First of all, the beginner box as a product is phenomenal. I love the beginner box. The fact that it comes with pawns, like 60-some pawns, like pawns being kind of cardboard miniatures that stand up, is phenomenal. And then this adventure is a very traditional first, it's a very traditional box set first adventure. It ends with a dragon. It starts out with goblins. There are, every room has a different purpose. You encounter basically everything the game has to offer. There's a room with a puzzle. There's a room with a trap. There's rooms with monsters. But every room has something to offer.
I like how on page 16 about game mastering, it has a fat guy with a double chin with his mouth wide open, pointing in the distance with what's clearly a game manual in his hand. So it's got their, this is what a game master is. It's a big fat guy who yells at you. Sorry.
In our experience. So, but the rooms, every room in this dungeon is basically a page in the book. So at the top, you know, I'm looking at page 4 of the Game Master's Guide, the 100 and some page booklet that comes with the beginner box. And, you know, every area of the dungeon is a page, and it describes, okay, hey, here's the goblin ambush with two unarmored goblins. And here's you know, how combat goes. Here's how to think about combat. Here's what to read to your players as you play this. And I ad-libbed a lot of this stuff. I've definitely learned not to run pre-generated adventures just as they come. So I ad-libbed a tremendous amount of this. But just stepping through it, I mean, there's the goblin ambush. There's a goblin cave with, you know, you can explore the kind of their bedrolls and their crappy treasure chests and all that. There's a magical fountain that you guys put some coins in. There's an altar with a trap and puzzles and all this. There is, of course, the obligatory first adventure giant spider nest with spider webs. There's a pillar. There's a water-based room, the giant pool and some water-based enemies. There's more goblins, there's skeletons, there's undead, and then if you get to the end and you decide to, there's a dragon. So, Mike, at the end of Cobalt Hall, we talked about the white dragon, Vestingetorix, or whatever its name actually was, that you fought at the end of Cobalt Hall. The red box, the D&D red box, which we haven't covered. Or did we cover that? No, we did. We did.
We did.
That had the white dragon. And here we are with another beginner adventure with the dragon. And this has this whole deadly encounter red text warning. I am going to point something out. The Dragonbane longsword. So this is the only piece of fudging that I did. That Dragonbane longsword, which is listed here because it's really important to this combat, it actually comes from the only room that you guys refused to clear. So
that's us.
The only bit of fudging that I did, because you guys are struggling with this dragon, is I put the Dragonbane longsword in its hoard. So let's. I don't want to talk too much about the adventure as a whole, but I want to cover that last combat because we walked through the adventure. We did the rooms. It felt a little stilted because we were doing rooms in a pre-generated dungeon, which is fine. But we got through it pretty quickly, and we got to this last combat. And this last combat was really dramatic and interesting and fun. And you guys, the one room you hadn't cleared is the room that has this Dragonbane longsword, which is a +3 against dragons. And this dragon had a pretty high AC. Its AC was 21, which at first level, taking something on that AC 21, you got to roll really high to even hit this thing.
Yep.
I mean, you guys were rolling, and some of you had zero bonus to hit. So it was literally impossible for you to hit this dragon without critting. Like, you had to crit to hit.
Yeah, my cleric had +0 to hit.
So I really wanted to get this longsword in your hand, so I had you guys roll a few perception checks, and then I let one of you notice this sword with kind of a dragon carved around the hilt in the dragon's hoard, in the pile of treasure, and I let one of you make a break for it. And that's the only fudging I did. Other than that, I played the dragon ruthlessly, learning from you, Mike. I played the other monsters in this adventure ruthlessly. You guys were down on hit points, and the three of you, so it was the three of you, because Chris didn't make this game. So it was Ezrin, it was Kyra, and it was Mercial. You had no tank. And the three of you were able, with no fudging, aside from putting the sword where it wasn't, to take out this dragon. Because Kyra abandoned combat, made a break for it, grabbed the sword, and came back. And as I recall, this ended on a critical.
Yep.
Was it you that crit?
I think it was me with the Dragonbane sword.
So you were about to die. Everyone else was down. Ezrin was down. Mercial was down.
I had like 3 hit points left.
You had 3 hit points left. This dragon, if it hit you, and it hit basically every turn, you were about to die. And all of a sudden you crit.
Yep.
And then you confirmed your crit. And a crit in Pathfinder does double damage.
Yep.
So you rolled your double damage and you barely took it out. I mean, I think you had you either exactly took out its hit points or you had one damage point left to spare that took it down. But man, that was barely, with no fudging. That was dramatic. Like, I remember when you beat the dragon, you guys were like, everyone, pit of your stomach, you guys were all like, oh.
Yeah, we were pretty stoked when it happened too. It was a good session.
So I changed the hook into this adventure. I had you guys actually, so instead of having the mayor beg you for help with this black dragon, I thought, that's not very interesting. To me, the black dragon, I mean, they can speak. Dragons in Pathfinder and D&D, they can speak common. So it's not a dumb monster hanging out on the edge of town. This thing, it wants treasure, and it's a young black dragon. You know, how do young dragons accumulate treasure? They just go around trying to find treasure, and I mean, no. It'd be much more effective if they had kind of a crime syndicate, had minions going out. So I made this dragon kind of the head of a local crime syndicate. And the guy that directed you, the farmer that asked for your help, was really a con man working for the dragon, and his job, so Sandpoint is this kind of port town, is to take strangers that are new in town and convince them to kill this dragon, when in reality the dragon is more than capable of overpowering them and then taking their coins, their armor, their weapons, taking their stuff. And that's one of several ways this dragon was accumulating wealth. That to me was a much more interesting story than a dragon hanging out in a dungeon populated with skeletons and goblins.
And I remember giving you a hard time for that, because I don't think I understood that, you know, dragons in this world were talking, intelligent dragons and able of having crime syndicates. And I had a hard time wrapping my mind around this mobster dragon going around running a protection racket.
Yeah, you're like, wait a minute, this dragon's a mobster?
Yeah.
This dragon's a gangster? Brian, what is it?
That's kind of crazy. Now that I think of it, I mean, it's very Tolkien-esque, I guess, kind of dragon.
Which is kind of what I was going for.
Yeah.
I wanted something interesting and different. You know, logical or not, I think you can get away with the logical. You can't get away with boring.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So, I don't think it's crazy. It's just, when I think of dragons, I don't think of the, funny enough, when people think of fantasy, they think of Tolkien. But when I think of dragons, I do not think of the Tolkien-esque dragon. I think of, like, the dumb dragon that...
Yeah, same here.
The
monster.
Arthurian legend of dragons, where they're creatures. They're dumb creatures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like the guy from Ghostbusters 2. I can never remember his name, but he's... No.
Janusz?
Yeah, that guy.
Nice.
He played, in the movie, the Dragon Slayer.
I don't know the name of the actor, but...
I think of dragons like in that world. It didn't speak. It didn't talk. It wasn't smart. It was a monster.
Yeah.
That's how I think of them too. But and this thing's languages, it's common as listed.
And I think to your credit, that definitely worked out, because the fact that a dragon could have a crime syndicate and a protection racket, I think that inspired Nathan that, oh, I could have a crime syndicate and a protection racket, and that's a huge foundation of his character.
It led into some more games that we'll get into later. But
yep.
So lessons learned, right? Don't, even in a beginner adventure, even if it's your first game, look at what's on the page and make it make sense in your head. If things don't make sense, if you read that and you're like, this doesn't make any sense, why is this dragon hanging out here? Make it make sense. Ask yourself why and come up with a story. And even if you never, and don't write it down. Don't prep this on the page. Don't worry about that. But just kind of sit and think for a few minutes before you run. And that to me is the most vital prep. Session after session, thanks to the beginner box, the stats are done. The CR is done. Like, and the monster selection is limited enough that I can pretty quickly pick out monsters for next week's adventure. That's all done. What's not done is taking a minute to think about what makes sense and what doesn't to you, and letting the players uncover that. And that's what has made this campaign work. By limiting myself on the monsters, by limiting myself on the heroes, I can have more fun with the concepts.
I would agree with that.
So we ended the session. You guys had barely beaten the dragon. We were so relieved, and we couldn't. It's one of those moments. It's one of those magical moments where after a session, you don't want to go your separate ways. Like, oh man, that was adrenaline pumping and all that. I don't want to go home yet. So we went and we did dinner at Red Robin. Do you remember that?
Yep.
It's like, let's go get some dinner. Let's go talk about this some more. And we recounted the different portions of the combat and who was down to what hit points and the next game. And that's so rare. It's rare to have one of those sessions. So
yep.
I spend a lot of time on the show giving myself a really hard time about things I did wrong. That another lesson for GMs is when you have something magical happen in a session, take a minute. Even if everyone does have to leave and go home and they have obligations, whatever, take a minute and appreciate what just happened and what you facilitated and what the group facilitated and what you catalyzed as far as a group of people having a great time and getting some adrenaline going about this completely fictional adventure that you've all collaborated on. Enjoy your victories. And this was a victory. What a great way, even though it was a pre-made dungeon, what a great way to kick off what has become a pretty fun campaign.
I agree.
Yeah.
Anything you guys would add to that?
Dude, not really. Not without getting too far ahead and talking about other games. So yeah.
This is the first pre-written adventure that I ran where I said, so I've talked about other episodes. Hey, here's an introductory dungeon. Here's a dungeon crawl. And I didn't tweak it, and it wasn't fun. Here's one that I tweaked, and it was fun. So this is the realization of previous lessons learned, right? Yeah. The lesson learned I learned before is, hey, I should tweak. And then, boom, I tweaked, and it worked. So, you know, for me, lesson learned confirmed for me. Tweak your beginner dungeons. Make it make sense to you. Share that with the players. And that's RPG Lessons Learned this week.
Awesome.
So RPGLessonsLearned.com. All the subscribe buttons are there. If you haven't joined us before, hopefully you'll want to listen to more of us. This is episode
15.
15? Maybe 16?
It's 15.
It's 15? Okay. This is episode 15. We have way more to record, and we have a lot of history, so check us out.
We have a guest coming up.
That's right. Next episode, we're going to have Tanner with us from Shadow of the Cabal. So, Brian, can you put the link to their podcast in the show notes?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Awesome. Shadow of the Cabal is... Frankly, right now, I'm not just saying this because he's coming on the air. I've said it before on Reddit. It's my favorite actual play podcast that I have listened to from beginning to where they are right now. It's a great L5R Legend of the Five Rings podcast. It's about samurai operating in Rokugan, which is not feudal Japan, but it's an awful lot like it. A great actual play podcast, a great game master. Interesting system, very, very interesting world. Love their show. I'm delighted to have him on. He's going to talk about one of his sessions, and he's going to walk us through the lessons that he learned as a GM. So really looking forward to having that conversation. All right, thank you for listening. People call them postmortems, evaluations, appraisals, reviews, retrospectives. We call them lessons learned, and we're sharing ours with you.